Welcome to Goodniks, a podcast about doing good in the world. Together, we dig into the experiences of people who do good in very different ways to understand what inspires them, what frustrates them, and what keeps them going. I'm Annalisa Enrile, a social worker, professor, and human rights activist. Whether you're doing good yourself or just thinking about it, I'm glad you're here. In our last episode, we heard how our Goodniks were able to convert the worst moments in their lives into good work in the world. When faced with tragedy and trauma, how did they remain hopeful and use their trauma as a catalyst for their work? In this episode, we talked to our Goodniks about what they might have told their younger selves. What did their younger selves need to know about doing good work in the world?
There's constant trauma happening. You're driving on the freeway, somebody cuts you off. You're already traumatized. That's happened to me. And I feel like unconsciously, the next time I go on the freeway, I feel scared. My heart might start palpitating faster because I'm thinking already. And I have to remind myself that's not going to happen again. It happened yesterday or a week ago, and it's not going to happen again. Or it might. What are the chances? So I realize at a very young age that we're in this world, we're alive. And things will have a repercussion on a person, be it a positive or maybe not a, you know, a great consequence or a great repercussion. This is the reality of things. But I realize that we all should be able to have a support system or several support systems that can help us process whatever things we're going through.
Deborah is a social worker, a psychotherapist, and the founder of community programs that serve women and youth in Los Angeles.
I don't want to call them all the traumas, but things that we're living through, experiences that are informing who we are as we're going through life at a very young age due to many things on, you know, anti-Semitic experiences that my family and I lived through, seeing how my parents struggled in making sure that they could be free in every sense of the world by, you know, practicing their religion, practicing their traditions or culture, being able to say, hey, I do exist. I'm here. At that time, I didn't know, but I now, or as I was growing up, I remember thinking, you know, wow, like my parents have gone through so much. We have gone through so much. And I hope that we are able to have that space to be able to process and not to forget, but to process and understand that these are things that we had no choice and we had to go through them and learn from them. And for me, learning to not put my head down ever. When something is said that I know that it's not okay, or when something is done that I know it's not okay, being able to have a voice and say, no, that's not okay. And when trying to find solutions to whatever it is that's happening at them. It brings a lot of memories. I feel like before I used to want to forget a lot of things. Now I don't want to forget about anything. I want to have that fuel me in order for me to continue to do good in our communities. There was a time where, you know, my parents traveled from place to place. I only have one sister, one sibling. And so we traveled around the world, to be honest with you, different, you know, countries and just, I feel like my parents trying to find a place where they felt they could be themselves. And I do remember one incident where, I don't remember what it was. There was a store or something and they knew my father was Jewish. And somebody saying, don't sell to them because they're Jewish. And me being a little girl and hearing that, not fully understanding what that meant. And also the struggles of being a Jewish, or us as a family, a Jewish family of color, also had an additional kind of hindering feeling to it on top of being Jewish and also not an Ashkenaz, but a Sephardic Jew rather. And that had a different kind of feeling as well. I didn't understand why people would want to say something like that. Don't sell to them because they're Jewish. And so wondering in that. And then a lot of the times I also remember many things not wanting to be shared by our parents, to my sister and myself. I didn't understand why then. And there were times where I was really frustrated wanting to know, and my parents, I think, wanting to put it behind us. And maybe it was a way of protecting my sister and I, but we didn't understand that because we were young. And so even till now, sometimes maybe when I would like to maybe ask certain questions or address certain things with my parents, I'm very kind when I do it, and with it, already knowing from the get-go that maybe I will not get an answer, and being okay with that, because there's certain things maybe that they're too painful that they do not want to address or talk about. It's interesting too, because I have grown sons. One is 29 and the other one's 25. And sometimes they ask these questions too. And they can't believe that I don't know certain things. They're like, but how can you not know? That's your mom and dad. What do you mean you don't know? And I tell them, I really don't know. And I've asked, and hopefully maybe if you would like to ask your grandma and grandpa, maybe they will be willing to share certain things, and then let me know so that I know too, because I, yeah, very interesting, really odd, but interesting. And that's just what it is.
It's human nature to look back on our past with some regret, but our Goodniks show us a different way to look back. They have interesting ideas about what they would tell their younger selves today. Yossi uses arts and culture to organize people in politics or for social change.
I have obstacles, but the work doesn't, if that makes sense. Like, the work will always find its way to success. And if I believe in and I invest in and I appropriately approach the work, then I have yet to find something that hasn't been able to succeed. And what that means is I just need to get out of the way. And I need to remove my ego. I need to be able to ask for help. I need to be able to take a different approach. I need to understand that maybe my perspective is incorrect, that who I am and how I was raised and the way that I'm looking at the problem might be the problem, and invite people into the process. And it may take longer than I thought, or I may have to shelve things. But I've really honestly never, once I am able to like shed those things, I've never hit an obstacle that I haven't been able to overcome. And sometimes that means giving up the work and giving it to somebody else. And that's very hard, but it's ultimately where I gauge success and not success, and not on like my obstacles, but on the work itself. That is hard, especially if it's something that I've birthed or that I'm invested in, that I believe I'm capable of, that I believe I'm the right person to do. Detaching from self and ego in that way is like a really hard battle. And I do it kicking and screaming sometimes, and sometimes it gets taken from me, but ultimately I have to come to peace with it and give it away in the process, you know? Of course I hit obstacles, and of course I am faced with challenges that I have to do work. I have to spend time on myself. For me, it's, you know, meditation, exercise, you know, caring about my alcoholism, balancing my work life, my kind of work and my family life, checking in with people, surrounding myself with advisors, you know, there's a ton of work that goes into checking your shit and making sure that you get out of your own way for the work to be successful.
Michelle is the director of planning for a community institution in Miami.
I think that you have to have humility to recognize that you don't necessarily have, you know, all the answers or know that you're going to be successful. But I think there's always trepidation in terms of thinking about, is this something I can do? Is this something I have the capacity to do? Especially when it's uncharted waters. It's easier when this has been done and let's follow this path. But if you're trying to come up with a new way of doing things, it's scary because you just don't know where to take the next step. You know, and I think that's where bringing in others is really helpful, you know, so that you recognize that this is not something you have to do on your own. You don't have to have all of the ideas of how to do it. But if you bring in people who have different perspectives, who have different life experiences, who can be resources, then it doesn't feel quite so daunting.
Jennifer is a neonatal ICU nurse where she spends her days caring for critically ill babies.
There is a side of nursing that is politics. There is a side of nursing that is not the idealistic spiritual healer part that I love to embrace and choose to embrace. There is a side of nursing that is difficult to accept in the same way that teachers are an integral part of the future of a country and of a generation, but will never get paid what they're worth. I often think that nurses are the same way. And the further that I get into it, the more that I learn that there are caps on how much we can make. And there are, it's gross. We deal with bodily fluids. And I, for everything that I've learned and all the experiences that I've had, will never feel like I'm paid what I'm worth. But there are also times that I take it home with me. I get to be part of a team of nurses that attends labor and delivery, so I attend high-risk deliveries. And there are those moments where I'm standing in a room filled with people, and I get to hear a voice, and I get to feel the presence of another person that wasn't there, without the door ever opening, and they enter into this world. And sometimes in that same few moments, despite everything that I've learned and everything that I've done, I have to watch them leave this world in that same room without that door ever opening. And that doesn't go away. That doesn't get easier. And there'll never be any level or amount of compensation that can make up for that sense of powerlessness, that sense of loss, and that spinning that happens of what did I do wrong and could I have done more? And it's a job that I feel very strongly about the enormity of my responsibility, but with that responsibility, with that comes not just the ability to save a life, but every possible place that I might make a mistake, the ramifications and the weight of that mistake are just as overwhelming as the benefits of when I do it right. There is no like, oh, I had a bad day. You know, there is no, I don't get to have a mistake. I don't get to be human without somebody else suffering. My mistakes aren't just mine. So that's heavy.
David founded a nonprofit that organizes against genocides around the world.
I would say there's an easier path. It will also be painful in its own ways because you're going to have to reject certain parts of your identity that are very hard to argue with, and it has its own sort of like energy, but you might need to do that to survive, right? There's a reason why your ancestors suppressed their stories for certain points until they were older in life, and why so many survivors of atrocities do that, because it's hard to live with those memories so present in your daily life and wake up in the morning and work hard. The trauma is extremely intense. So I would probably talk to my younger self about the trauma and say, hey, this is going to be some really hard stuff. You're going to go through some very intense periods. There's an easier way. And your parents laid the groundwork for that. Your grandparents laid the groundwork. They lived the American dream in their own way. Just continue that. Go ahead. Go be a business strategy consultant. Go ahead and live the good life. Be a philanthropist on the side too. Go ahead. So I probably would have tried to make the case, but I don't think I would have bit. I'm pretty stubborn.
Jesse is an expert in building movements, organizing thousands or sometimes millions of people to make change.
Wow, what would I have said to my younger self about choosing to devote your life to movement building? I think I would have tried to talk myself out of it probably by saying it's really heartbreaking work. That there is a lot of loss and a lot of defeat along the way. And especially the movement building that I have tried to do in my life, which is everything from combating climate change to fighting for racial equity to electoral organizing. The victories are pretty damn sweet. But the truth is that change is really, really slow. And it's really hard, and you can do everything right, and you can be so smart, and you can still suffer kind of crushing losses over and over again. So you've got to have a pretty thick skin, a pretty like tough heart to be able to go through that over and over again and still want to get up the next morning and go at it again. So I guess I have to warn my younger self that is the life that she is in store for, but I would probably have to immediately follow that up by saying, man, when you were in the presence of that like epic next level movement energy. There is just nothing sweeter on planet Earth than that. So it's probably worth all the heartache along the way.
If you could talk to your younger self, what would you say? What would you warn yourself about the work you were about to do? Our Goodniks said they would tell their younger selves to prepare for how hard a life working for a better world will be. However, the Center for Advanced Hindsight at Duke University found that knowing something isn't always the key to changing behavior. This is called an intention-action gap. Sometimes, even if you know something, you continue on anyway, and it's the experience that will teach you. What have you learned that you wish you knew beforehand? Would it really have changed your actions? Would you have wanted it to? In our next episode, we ask Goodniks two questions that feel impossible to answer, yet they are uniquely qualified to speak to them. One, does the work you do make you a good person? Two, you'll just have to listen to find out. Thank you for being part of Goodniks. Goodniks was created and executive produced by Jeff Leitner, produced by Amanda Roscoe Mayo, with original music by Adam Ohlendorf. I am your host, Annalisa Enrile. Goodniks is supported by the Jim Joseph Foundation and inspired by every one of you who is doing good in the world. To learn more about Goodniks, visit goodniks.org. That's GOODNIKS.org. Or follow us on Twitter at The Goodniks and on Instagram at the_Goodniks.